Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. It's Tuesday, January 28th, and we are here to consider the Department of Veterans Affairs budget, Senate Bill 5545, and fellow folks staff will now brief us, since you all know that I'm very incapacitated.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll be very brief. The Department of Veterans Affairs provides services to veterans in Oregon. It does so through three programs. It has the Veterans Home Loan, which is entirely other funded. In your budget request, there's a request for $22 million of expenditure limitation. It also has about $805 million of non-limited funds in the budget for repayment of loans and issuance of loans. It has a veteran services program that provides counseling, educational support, and some conservatorship services to veterans and their families. This is the only general fund portion of the budget. It's the request includes about $2.5 million in general fund and $600,000 of other funds. These other funds are principally generated through conservatorship fees. And then there's the Veterans Home in the Dalles, entirely other funded. $16.2 million of limitation is the budget request. And there's a little amount of non-limited funds there for contributions towards the home. Veterans Affairs Department is audited annually by the Secretary of State for financial audit because of the loan program. That's the only audit that's been conducted. Those are the only audits that have been conducted during the 2 years. No problem with the opinions on those. There was a budget note in the department's last budget, and that was to conduct a comprehensive market rate study and report to the appropriate interim committee. That report was submitted to the emergency board, I believe, just this past January, and the report was accepted by the emergency board. Other than that, there's not a lot more for me to add at this time. And we have Mr. Mangus from the department here.
Okay.
And Linda Gilbert from the Department of Administrative Services.
Come on up. We need to hear from you. We'll ask you to pull that mic a little close. I think we need to do that in this room, and then you'll have to share it.
So many pencils here. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Mangus. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs.
I'll pull the mic a little closer.
John Mangus, director of the Department of Veterans Affairs, with me is Randy Basil, the Department Budget Officer, and also our budget analyst from the Executive Department, Department of Administrative Services, Linda Gilbert. I would like to mention that today we have all nine members of the Governor's Advisory Committee here today, plus representatives of various veterans organizations in support of the budget, and I appreciate all of them being able to come here from all over the state. The mission of the Department of Veterans Affairs has really not changed since I've been there. It's the employees of the department are advocates for veterans, their dependents, and survivors, and we're dedicated for providing quality programs and services to meet their current and future needs. That hasn't changed, but we think that's very important, and that all of our employees are committed to that. We have six goals. That of maintaining the fiscal integrity of the Veterans Home Loan Program. And a couple of you here were around when we were going through some tough times back in the 1980s, and we fixed that problem, and we intend to keep that problem fixed. And we want to provide more Oregon veterans with an opportunity for home ownership through the Veterans Home Loan Program. We want to improve our service delivery through additional business partners, and to improve the financial stability of Oregon's disabled veteran population. We want to retain affordability of care for residents at our Oregon Veterans Home located in the Dalles, and we want to increase veterans' awareness of all department programs and veterans' benefits. All of our programs are linked to the Oregon Constitution or Oregon Revised Statutes. We have no programs we just started because they seemed good at the time. On page 2 of the overview that you have, we or to report on how we link to Oregon benchmarks, and we are linked to three major Oregon benchmarks, that of the state bond rating, because we do occupy about 52% of the state's general obligation debt. It's $1.2 billion. That's down from 1985. We had about 97% of the entire debt of the state of Oregon that was tied up in the state home loan program. And we have a big impact on whether on the state's credit rating. And not only S&P is listed here, but also Moody's and Fitch watch us carefully because of the amount of debt we carry. And in 1985, we were directly responsible for the state's downgrade in its credit rating. And when we fixed our problem, we were directly responsible in the upgrade for the state. And we intend to do our part to keep that up there in the future. Oregon Benchmark 58, Independent Seniors, really can be viewed a couple of different ways, but one primarily is the fact that we work with an aging veteran population and survivor population, and we do our best to obtain federal VA benefits for these individuals and medical care to allow them to live and continue to live independently. But we also try to provide as close as we can to independent living at our care facility in the Dalles for the individuals, our residents at the home. Benchmark number 73, owner-occupied households. That's our main business, is the Oregon Veterans Home Loan Program. These are loans made to qualified Oregon veterans, and they have to be owner-occupied facilities. We have three or four performance measures that are tied back to the Oregon benchmarks, and one of them that you might be interested in, because with the Veterans Home Loan Program, is to we measure the financial integrity of the home loan program and constant review of our delinquency accounts. And you know, as you can see that we measure ourselves on every account that's 1 day to 90 days delinquent, and we measure ourselves against the Mortgage Bankers Association of America and the Oregon Bankers Association. We have two benchmarks that refer back to our Veterans Services Program. Two benchmarks or performance measures that refer to our veterans' home, and there's two programs or two performance measures that actually cross over all three programs that the department has, that of our Veterans News and a number of individuals that use our website. And that's what we've seen ourselves doing a lot in recent years, is transferring information to the veteran population, primarily on federal benefits and what a veteran or a survivor may be entitled to. The on page 5, the performance measure data summary. This is basically a form developed by the Progress Board, and this information on the data side we were ever able to provide back to 1997, but you'll notice on the target side that our targets are new beginning 2003, 4, and 5, and only one that we had that we could give them for 2002. The all agencies will have to provide that information to you, I guess, by the January 31st this month. The key performance measures, data sources, is really where we got the data to measure ourselves against. And as mentioned about delinquent accounts, we measure ourselves on a monthly basis against the Mortgage Bankers Association. And you can see on performance measure number one on page 7 that the delinquency on June 30th of 2002, the percentage of all of our accounts delinquent was 2.02. as compared to the national average was 2.23. And I'm proud to say that on December 31st, the end of this last month, our delinquency rate has dropped to 1.76, and that's all accounts delinquent. If you just measured our 90-day plus accounts, dropped out foreclosures and bankruptcies, which really you can't work any longer once they're into the court system, either the state or the federal, were 0.16, which is an excellent delinquency rate. At one time, we had the highest delinquency rate in the nation back in 1985. So this is substantially better than we were, I guess it's quite a few years ago, but it's it seems like yesterday. These are external measures that you see, 1 through 10 on page 7 and 8, but the department also uses internal measures to how we would look at our programs to improve our operations and accountability, just like any manager would. The Progress Board has given on page 9 a performance measure review, and I would just like to comment on their comments. And in the summary, you'll notice that they stated that the agency met all the five basic criteria that were specified in the performance measure guidelines, that our performance measures were well aligned with the seven goals and the three Reagan benchmarks, that our performance measures are outcome oriented, and that the data sources sheet is excellent and includes additional information on some measures that was not actually required by the Progress Board. In their comments, number one, they mentioned that all of our benchmarks and the goals appeared to be logical and reasonably comprehensive given the very broad mission statement of the agency. And in number three, they state that our performance measures are excellent outcome measures and that we have made some attempt to incorporate national comparisons, which is an advanced performance measure criteria that we did not have to do, but we elected to do it anyway. And actually, I would like to mention, because you may be seeing her in years to come, Paula Brown with us today, worked with the Progress Board on the development of our performance measures, and they actually asked at one time if they could use our measures as training for other agencies.
So, I don't blame them, because I'm going to be asking them questions by looking at this.
But that was all put together by Ms. Brown. On page 10 is an organizational chart, high level, on how the agency is structured. Not a lot has changed over the years. Up until 1993, our programs were Veterans Home Loan and Veterans Services. In 1993, the Oregon Veterans Home was added as a program for the department. You'll see in the smaller print, black and blue, that the number of positions that the agency had and the programs had for the 01-03 budget, and that what we are requesting for the 03-05 budget. We are actually returning 17 positions that we no longer need. And some of you will remember that we've had a history of doing this since, mid-80s, we were at 612 employees. And going into the next biennium, we should be at 148 positions. So we
can ask questions.
Oh, Senator Carter. Yes, certainly.
John, under the Veterans Loan Program, I noticed back in the 80s, you're right, and Mr. Chairman, kudos to John for his work, because he's being very modest. It was a mess when he came in the early 80s, so thank you for your work, John. And I want to thank Ms. Brown for her work, because I don't. Every other department that comes through here, if they don't have a standard like this, they're going to be in trouble, and I don't blame them for asking you how to do it. But under the loan program, are we seeing the higher levels of positions because we're looking at an economy that has gone down and you're having to give more services and you're losing more in the counties, because in Multnomah County, Mr. Chairman, we're going to lose our whole program. And in rural areas, I'm very concerned if they start losing programs because of what is going on with our veterans. So is that why we see that increase on the veterans loan program? Yes, I saw this, and it is a decrease. But I mean, in this program alone, is an increase. And I was wondering what happens if that one is up.
The Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, the Veterans Loan Program. Actually, we would be we're giving up 13 mm-hmm. positions.
Right.
But. You know, we've done a lot of things. At one time, we had 16 offices throughout the state of Oregon. We've closed all of those offices. We've tried to find ways to do the same business we've always done, but doing a little better. You remember in the old days, the banks and the savings and loan companies hated us because we were making low interest rate loans to veterans. But today, we partner with banks and mortgage brokers to originate our loans around the state. So a veteran living in Kay Falls does not have to come all the way to Salem to get a vet's loan. There will be a bank or a mortgage broker locally that can originate the loan. Then we buy that loan back and service that. And just trying to develop partnerships with the private sector, and it's worked well for us. And now I think you'll find that on every bill we have in, the banks and the mortgage brokers are there to support our program.
Yeah, I apologize. I was reading this side down, and my senator was trying to show me that, and I'm just not seeing it. But I would worry about that, because that was the problem we had in the 80s, because of the cost of transportation, people coming from all over the state to come to Salem to get all this work done. And I just don't want to see veterans have to do that again. When people have put themselves on the line for us as Americans, we should make it life more comfortable, not life, more cumbersome for them. And so that's what I wanted to make sure of, but I was reading it upside down. Thanks.
Senator Carter, on the Veteran Services side, you alluded to Multnomah County.
Right.
And our service side of the program does not do the home loan work. It works with disabled veterans, survivors, young vets going to school on the GI Bill, that sort of thing. And you see that we're actually trying to maintain the staff we have there without any reductions. We have 19, but that's down from, I think it was 35 in 1985. That's a general funded program, and so we're actually, our general fund appropriation with the reductions going into the next budget, we're probably about $50,000 less than we were in 1989-91, but we're still doing the same thing. And in that case, and we'll talk about it more, is how we partner with counties to try to reach all the veterans throughout the state of Oregon and some of the problems that Multnomah County is experiencing right now.
A couple more questions. Senator Morrison.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Of the 165 positions in the old 103 budget, how many of them are presently filled?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morse, the 17 that we're returning are vacant.
They are vacant now.
We've been combining, and technology has helped us, but combining work responsibilities and that, we don't need those positions to go forward into the next biennium.
I know we should all be grateful that you're returning positions, but I guess we're all concerned as well. It appears to me, by watching the news, that we may be headed for war. Last time I checked, I think we were still at war from the last one. So it seems to me we may be creating war veterans fairly soon. This will allow you to deal with just the loan part I'm asking about at the moment.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, as far as the loan program, we're good to go. We've always been looking how to work smarter, and we're not trying to build an empire.
I know you're not doing that.
I'd be here arguing to keep those.
We tend to ratchet things down when times are tough, and yet in your situation, we're out there creating more. So.
Well, I don't think the war has ended for a lot of people from Vietnam right now.
I agree.
But what we are faced with and we'll hear more about it tonight, the State of the Union, is, you know, what are we going to do, and what is our posture for Iraq? But we have had Oregonians from the Oregon Army National Guard and Air Guard mobilized and sent to the Balkans, to Afghanistan, to Sinai. We just had some of the infantry units returned down to Medford, and another group coming back, I think, this week or next week. And these are young people, young Oregonians that were in the National Guard that were mobilized and moved off. If Iraq did become an issue and actually we attacked, there would be a lot more Oregonians. When they come home, we want to be there to help them with home loan programs, if that's what they want. Our service side, and that's the general fund side, and that's where the problem's at.
To that one, because that was my next question.
That's
you and I have talked about this over the years, and I appreciate that your statement that you're doing the same things that you were in the 80s, but you're not. I know in Clatsop County you're not, because you're not able to. Even with somebody who's only paid part-time and works as full-time as he can manage, you're not able to provide it because we, the state of Oregon, haven't given you the money to do it. And so what I would like from you, that you, I know you can only give if I ask, is what, I'm not even sure how to phrase it, increments of, if we were to provide you with additional funds, increments of what you could do with that. Because I know that in this particular situation, a little bit goes a long way. And I was there 2 years ago trying to get you more, and we didn't make it, but I'm still there. I think in terms of general fund money, what we get out of the county service officers is just tremendous.
Our, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, our budget allows us to reimburse counties 75% of their budget up to $12,500 if they will maintain an office. The counties are experiencing the same problems that state government is on the scarcity of general fund dollars or dollars available for various programs. County veteran service officers are not a mandated program, so generally county government's going to look to non-mandated programs to search for savings. The $12,000 that we contribute, and you know, most counties receive the maximum now, has not been updated, I think, since 1981. But the county has to make up the remainder of that to provide whatever staff that they feel is necessary for the veterans in that county. And it varies, you know, from county to county around the state, where the heavier population is, the more demand for service, but service is still demanded in Lake County too, but you know it wouldn't have as large of an office. They are what we will have available out of this budget for county veteran service officers would be reduced. And you remember last time House Bill 3534 was on the committee that we were in, was passed. That provided an additional $100,000 for distribution to counties, and that was the way it was structured was half of that $100,000 would be distributed equally to the county service officers, and the other half would be distributed based on population veterans in that county. And that was done, and certainly the counties appreciated that. And some counties worked through different programs where they're able to use that to leverage to get additional funds, matching funds from different sources, and that it will have an impact. And at a time when you see the possibility of more individuals requiring that help as they come home.
How much is being cut out of this budget?
What was it? $246,000.
Okay. And that would keep us at the 1981 level, would it?
Yeah, well, that actually would keep us at the 19th.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Senator. And when I saw that note in there about that reduction to the counties, I thought, I know a newly elected county commissioner I'm going to hear from, and that's my wife.
Yeah.
And we have a question from Representative Hanson.
Well, I'm an oldly elected county commissioner, so I've got some of the same concerns. And I was very, very fortunate to be involved in restarting the Multnomah County program when I was a county commissioner. And that, there were just incredible benefits that we were able to see, because it works both two ways. One, of course, it's a great help to some of the neediest veterans that very much need these services, and having somebody to be their advocate to help them get through the bureaucracy to gain those services can be a incredible help. The other one is these are services that in often case local government is going to have to step up and provide if the federal government isn't doing it. So there's a double savings. Besides what you're getting for the veteran, you're also avoiding some local social service costs. Anyway, what I was wondering is if, you know, I know the position that we were able to do in Multnomah County in the 90s, the aid that they received for veterans, got for veterans, was just incredible. It was a wonderful ratio. I forget the numbers, but I guess it'd be like 5 to 7 to 1 for what we were putting into the program. I'm wondering is if there's a way that we could look at veteran services as a form of economic development, and even look to spending lottery dollars on it. Because I think, you know, when we can bring federal dollars into our communities, that is a real form of economic development during times like we're in right now. And so maybe just as we go through all of our deliberations, since this committee has both economics as well as that, maybe we could look to see if there's a linkage in that way, because general fund dollars are going to be incredibly tight. Well, so are lottery dollars, but I think the pressure might not be quite as great on the lottery dollars as the general fund dollars. So that's an aside.
If I might say, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, that you made a point there about the dollars brought in. I don't have the information county by county with me, but overall, for the state, in fiscal 01, federal fiscal, I think it was $360 million that was brought back in through our office and our work with county service officers. And that's dollars that come in that are direct benefit payments to the veteran or to the widow of a veteran. And I don't know, I don't believe economists very much, but they would have a multiplier to put to that would establish an economic impact on the state. And even if it was 2, that's a substantial impact. And considering that probably keeps that individual from applying for assistance through other state programs. The other thing that you alluded to was another thing that keeps people from entering the state's system is how we move veterans to obtaining medical care through the VA medical system on the federal side. And you can't measure that in dollars, but it's substantial. And but it is important.
Would it be possible, relative to the question Representative Hansen, to get an analysis of what that, you know, at least a backfill of that amount of general fund would do relative to any kind of potential matches?
You can develop something and get to you. But, you know, I'm here along with Linda to with the governor's budget as it is,
right,
and would provide that information to you.
Just to understand that we're not the governor.
Mm-hmm.
No.
That's why we're
here. You're here to help us, right?
That's right.
Would you like me to continue, sir?
Yes, continue. Thank you.
With the agency overview beginning on page 11, the Veterans Home Loan Program summary, our objective there is to provide a home acquisition and home improvement loan to eligible qualified veterans at favorable interest rates. We do that because we are we do have the ability to issue general obligation debt to receive a preferred rate. And since the program was actually created for returning World War II veterans, and Since that time, the department has loaned over $7.4 billion to Oregon veterans, and we've made over 330,000 original and additional loans to veterans in the state of Oregon. The our veteran services programs, we provide counseling and claims assistance, and that's thousands of claims that we work on. I think it's around $13,000 claims during the biennium. We have a conservatorship program that doesn't get a lot of publicity, but we provide financial management services for 266 protected persons that we have been appointed the conservator by the courts of Oregon. And we have a small educational aid program that's been in existence since World War II. It's another one of these that has never been upgraded. We still pay $50 a month for undergraduate and $35 a month for graduate and technical vocational training. But it's still a good program, because what it does do is a kid that's uses all of his GI Bill entitlement on the federal side, he can still get some assistance, at least with books, out of this program. He can't use the two at the same time. But what we saw here during the, remember, lumber used to be king, and when lumber went down, a good example is up the canyon here, people in Mill City and Gates that had worked in mills for generations, mills started closing, the woods started closing, and they actually started taking advantage of community college programs and retraining, and this, this money was available to help on that tuition and that. And so it's a good program, and even though the dollars are small and the numbers that we help are small, it's been good for Oregon vets. And not only do we provide assistance to veterans, but we also work with their dependents and their survivors. And we do this through our office here in Salem, our claims office in the federal building in Portland, but then through our network with 34 county veteran service officers and the veterans organizations in the state. Our other program, the Oregon Veterans Home, that was a 1993 legislative program that was in response to lobbying by the veterans organization since, I think, 1949 to get a veterans home in the state of Oregon. The law was passed to create an Oregon Veterans Home and go forth do good. Only $1 was appropriated, and so we leveraged that dollar into $15 million. We do have a 151-bed skilled care facility and Alzheimer care facility located in Wasco County today. At the home, we have a concern on building maintenance may become an issue unless we are able to find additional revenues for the home. No general fund is provided for the home, and in fact, there is an Oregon revised statute that prevents any general fund being used for the Oregon Veterans Home. There's additional information on the, if you look back in the back, each program's tabbed, and we'll get to that later on. When we go through that, our agency on page 12, our agency business plan, representing our goals, the integrity of the home loan program is to continue to enlarge the pool of eligible veterans. One of the problems we do have is a discriminatory provision in the Internal Revenue Code that has existed since 1986. We've been working since 1990. There's only five states that are authorized by law, federal law, to issue what they call a qualified veteran mortgage bond. Oregon is one, Alaska, California, Wisconsin, and Texas. And in 1990, end of 1990, when the war clouds were gathering in the Middle East, we got together. I asked all of these people to get together, and so we could work as one unit to try to get this law changed, because I did not foresee that war lasting a week, and our folks coming home. We thought we had legislation that was going to move through the Congress, because everybody had a yellow ribbon and a flag on their desk, but when the ceasefire was declared, the flags came down, the ribbons went away, and our legislation, we've been working on it ever since and haven't got anywhere. Even though 2 years ago, Bill Archer from Texas was chairman of the Ways and Means Committee in Washington, and today from California, can't think of his name. But anyway, I mean, Bill Thomas are from states that have veteran home loan programs, and we still haven't been able to crack that nut. And it really, what it does is it prevents us from using the proceeds of these qualified veteran mortgage bonds for veterans who entered the service after 1976. And maybe if this takes off, we'll be back at them again this year, and maybe we'll get that changed. We want to provide more Oregon veterans with an opportunity for home ownership, and we list the strategies. We want to improve our service delivery through business partners, and we have, I think, as well as any agency, and maybe better, developed business partners in the private sector and with other governmental units. We want to improve the financial stability of Oregon's disabled population, but what we're talking about are veterans, and we do that a lot by training county veteran service officers. And it's not just filing a claim for somebody and letting it run its course, because that's not the way it goes. A lot of times there's just a cursory review and a denial, and again, the county veteran service officer, our staff, have to get in and appeal those claims, and the majority of them are going through our office in Portland, and we have to follow that through. And you think, well, you know, the system should work, and I agree it should work, but it doesn't. And if you remember, after Vietnam, lots of guys were coming home complaining about disabilities, and they blamed it on Agent Orange, and everybody from the Congress to the President to General Accounting to the branches of the service were denying that Agent Orange had any impact on these veterans. Slowly over time, Congress recognized first a rash, chloracne, but today prostate cancer for young people, an old man's disease, but veterans are dying from prostate cancer, and they finally recognize that this is actually due to exposure to Agent Orange. It was in the ground, it was in your skin, you were drinking it, it's interesting, and I'll tell you more about that as we go through it, but it's the court has made decisions, the Congress has made decisions, and it's very tough. And I used to bring an application with me to show, because a federal application for benefits is one page, open like that, and open like that. And it's the print's so small, most elderly people can't read it, and most educated people can't understand it. And it really takes somebody that's working with it all the time to make sure that these veterans receive the benefits that they're entitled to. And I think throughout the state, our county veteran service officers and our staff, I'll stack them up against, and I've been around a long time now and been to a lot of states, and I'll put our people ahead of any other state in the United States. We want to retain affordability of care for the residents of the Oregon Veterans Home. Inflation in the healthcare industry is out of sight. I don't think anybody sees that being brought in line in the near term. We were, even though that was not mandated, what we targeted for the Oregon Veterans Home were lower income veterans that, if they were not being able to be cared for at the Oregon Veterans Home, would enter the Medicaid system and be an additional charge to the state of Oregon. We were able to do that by getting these individuals that qualified a veteran's pension, plus what they call aid in attendance for nursing care from the federal VA, take that and their Social Security and a daily per diem that we get from the federal VA, and they were able to pay for their care at the Oregon Veterans Home. And I'll talk about the other things we did to make that affordable, since we get all of their prescription drugs for no cost for these individuals. We get their durable medical goods at no cost for these individuals. We have a lot of just sharing programs with the federal VA that no other state in the United States has, even though they have veterans home. They haven't worked the deals that we've worked so far. But these folks are being priced out of the Oregon Veterans Home. The one thing the 93 legislation did do was allowed us to create a trust fund so we could raise money to help offset the cost of care. And I'll go into that more, how that's worked. But veterans, we have a portion of that trust fund that's dedicated to covered care. And so when a veteran reaches a point that he can no longer afford to pay his cost of care, they can apply to us for covered care. Well, now it's, I think we have 9 effective ones right now, and they average about $300 a month, and I think there's 6 more pending. But you can't just say $300 a month. You have to set money aside for 24 months, not knowing the expectancy, that how long that individual will be there. That's $7,200. Pretty soon we're talking $80,000, $90,000 that we have to just hold off to the side to make sure these individuals are cared for. And that's under this year's budget, next year, and maybe even more. But we've committed that we will not kick anybody out of the Oregon Veterans Home. Once they're there, they're there, and we'll find a way to keep them there. The last goal, increasing veterans' awareness. I've always believed in tell everybody everything, and we try to do that not only through talking to people and training, but also our veterans' news. That's become quite a good public newspaper. Our if you're not on the distribution for that, you will be soon. And but it's to tell veterans about what's happening in the state of Oregon, but on a national level, what's available. And we try to target groups. We do it by era, like the Agent Orange issue. The Gulf War syndrome is another one that's been denied, but there it is. You know, what's making these people sick? We try to get that information out. SHAD, anybody heard that word? If you served in the Navy during the 60s and 70s, it might be a concern to you, because a lot of experiments were conducted by aircraft flying over ships and spraying them with certain types of agents to see what the reaction would be and how they would clean up. And that information was hidden away for several years, and it's just been recently uncovered, and an admission by the government that this was being done. And now we're attempting to find these kids. Well, they're not kids anymore, but you know, some of them that I know personally, their whole lives have been pretty much destroyed by the disabilities that they attributed to something. And here it comes out that they were on these ships that were being sprayed with some strange type of chemicals, and it was testing for chemical warfare is what it was.
We have a question.
Sir. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you were talking about the occupancy rates, we have an Alzheimer wing.
Yes, sir.
Is it full?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the Alzheimer wing, yes, is full. There's a real demand for that. It's a 25-bed.
The rate of expense or pay, in other words, those that are in that wing, do you have sources of revenue different to help cover the extra costs, or it just has to be averaged out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, they pay for their cost of care. I think it's $4 a day higher than the general population, what their charge is. It's a difficult population to work with. But it's an excellent. I don't know if any of you have had the opportunity to visit the home. I'd like to extend that offer to invitation to you on any day or weekend, and I'd be glad to take you through the home and show you. But it's 151 bed. The home is not full. There's a big problem. I talked about inflation in the healthcare industry. Well, also what you have is a scarcity in staff, and it's not local to Oregon. It's nationwide. The scarcity, you see it more in the paper. If you pick up the Oregonian, they're talking about the metro area, or they're talking down the valley here. But when you get to rural Oregon, the scarcity is it's real, very real. And we have that problem of finding qualified staff. It's a 155-bed home. Yesterday, our population was 104, and that's bounced to 104, 105, but we don't have the staff to open up that final wing. Well, and the note here is that the individuals in the Alzheimer wing could also apply, if they can't meet that, apply for our covered care out of our trust fund. I mean, that's open to all the veterans in the home, men and women, no matter what level of care.
Just a comment before you go on. You're talking about your agent, Orange, and then you're talking about what's sprayed over those ships. So we have a thing here in the house called the House Coffee, Agent Brown. It probably has a similar effect.
Well, and I think that's probably why you don't have coffee here. No,
we voted that out yesterday.
But some of us are all with it.
Well, we didn't, relative to this whole thing, I have... One of my cousins was one of the young men that stood in the Nevada desert while they set off an atomic weapon, and he dove into a hole as the blast went by. It's kind of amazing, though. They haven't really picked up any high numbers of abnormalities with that group, but they watch them constantly.
But there is a group. It sounds funny, but Atomic Veterans of America. And it's true. These are the guys that were marched out in the desert for these explosions, or were put on islands or on shipboard in areas just to test the impact on troops in the field. You know, you go to a dentist and they throw a lead sheet over your chest to protect you from x-rays, but, you know, when they stand up and say, jump in a foxhole when the light starts coming at you, you know, it's a little more impact. And there are, that's another one, they denied that this would ever cause you any harm. It was in the early 1970s that they finally started paying a little bit of attention to some people that were very persistent on a national level, and that's grown and grown and grown, although the federal government is quick to deny any culpability in being responsible for any of this. I'll keep moving here, and I'll finish this real quick because I know Linda's getting antsy over here waiting for her turn. Has there been any major program changes in the last 10 years? Yes, only one, and that was the 93 Legislative Assembly creating the Oregon Veterans Home and then assigning that responsibility to the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Like I said, there was $1 assigned to that. Since we didn't receive any money, we put that out to bid to 232 governmental units around the state and said, if you give us $4.5 million, which would represent a 35% match for a federal grant, we would build that in your community. And well, $4.5 million, some infrastructure, and up to 15 acres of land. Several people came forward offering, you know, a piece of a city park and an old building and things like that. But Wasco County stepped up, and the citizens of that county passed a bond issue and gave us $4.5 million. The city of the Dalles did about $500,000 worth of infrastructure, putting in water and sewer and a road to the site. Two families gave us the land. We invited the 1249th Engineers to do an army exercise, and they leveled that mountain for us so we could build on a level building site. And what you have is a $15 million, roughly 76,000 square foot skilled care facility that is probably the primo care facility anywhere in the Northwest. And that's why I'd like to get you up there to see that. It's wonderful. General fund dollars were specifically excluded from being used for the construction or operation of the home. To date, well, we opened October 9th, 1997. To date, we've served over 430 veterans and men and women. And residents pay for their cost of care with the per diem that we receive from the federal VA. And it's been an excellent program. I don't think there's anybody that has criticized that program. It's a program you talked about, and Dallas talked about audits early on, but we receive the same inspections that any care facility in the state of Oregon does by Senior Disabled Services, but we do them one better. We're also inspected by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, and it's a very strict formula that they follow. And also we team with them, so we're learning, and they're helping us all the way through this process, and because they want to see us succeed with this home, too. How do we control costs? Well, we've done a lot of things over the years. We've closed our field offices. At one time was 16 offices. I think I've closed 14 of them. We had 612 employees at one time. We're asking for 148 for the next biennium. We've moved to an agency-based loan origination and software system, and we've contracted with banks and mortgage brokers throughout the state. Today we have 25 approved lenders, banks that have been approved to originate our loans, and many of them with multiple branches throughout the state. And we have 53 approved mortgage brokers with multiple branches throughout the state. So a veteran can go just about anywhere local, locally to apply for an Oregon Veterans Loan. Or if he wishes, or she wishes, they can come to us at the department and we'll do that for them. Our Veteran Services Program, we control our costs. Some states, all your service officers throughout the state are members of the state program. In Oregon, we do that by working with counties and trying to assist them, but also training them. And we utilize a new claims management software system that helps us as far as being more efficient in the office. And now we have the ability to file our claims electronically with the federal VA. Our Oregon Veterans Home, the other thing that the legislature did do is they authorized me to hire state employees to run the home, but it was pretty much an easy recognition on our part that we had absolutely no experience running a nursing home or for providing health care, and so we elected to, and we didn't have any money to hire them anyway, and we elected to contract that care out. And so when the home opened in 1997, the care provider was Diversified Health Services, and they had the contract for the first 3 years. It went out to bid. Mid-Columbia Medical Center, which is a regional-based hospital in the Dalles with an excellent reputation, has the current contract. That contract expires in September, and we are in the process of developing the bid that will be out to bid again here shortly. And MCMC is expected to bid on it again. And like I mentioned, you gave us the authority to have a trust fund, so we've had to fundraise. And we thought early on, if we ever got to $4.5 million, that we could probably accomplish what we wanted to do with the earnings. Well, that's when interest rates were and the returns in the stock market were much different than they are today.
Yeah.
You know, where maybe you're getting 1.5% to 2.5%. But nevertheless, we had to go out and raise money to make this program work. And so the veterans organizations have been wonderful. They worked with their local posts and chapters to, you know, bingo money and everything else comes to us. One organization, DAV, one of the guys that lobbied this through, Dick Light, started asking people, if a friend or a family member passes away and you may want to make a donation in their memory, just make it to the Oregon Veterans Home instead of buying flowers or something like that. So, you know, we get $25 here and there, and it's picking up. One little check came in, and it was such a scraggly little handwriting. You knew it was a little old lady. It was $1, but she wanted to help veterans. The veterans license plate. We finally got that through, even though motor vehicles didn't want to do that. But the fact is, we have a veteran's license plate in the state of Oregon. We get $5 per plate, $10, but DMV cops a fee, and so we actually only net $7.50 a plate. And so far, we've raised about $45,000 with that license plate for the home. We are part of the combined federal campaign. We got about $6,500 so far. Grants, some of you may know the name Sam Johnson, longtime member of the Oregon Legislature. Sam Johnson was a lumberman and set up a foundation, and he's deceased now, but he was a veteran, and his widow is a veteran. And his daughter, a member of the Oregon Legislature, Betsy Johnson, is the only foundation that has provided us any money. And not that we don't go to every foundation we can think of, is they turn right around and say, you're a state program, the state should fund you, and they turn us down. Betsy Johnson was kind of our guardian angel and championed us through, and we did receive a grant. That's helped us because now we can go back to these other foundations and say, yes, we have received a grant, and maybe they will look at it a little bit differently. Direct solicitations, we do that all the time, and we keep going back to the same people. And anywhere, it's $1 to $1,000. Vets organizations bought all the television sets for the home. Last legislative session, we got on the, after getting beat up, the Oregon Charitable Checkoff and the Oregon State Income Tax Program. We're not one of the listed entities. You have to go to the instruction page. We are number 12. If you have a return coming and you want to give us $5 to whatever, put number 12 on the block, and that money will go to the Oregon Veterans Home. And you will probably start seeing some solicitations for that in the near future, just targeting people, because this, well, in February, that's probably in March, is when they're going to be doing the most preparations on that.
John, so do you have a charitable trust arm of the Veterans?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, no. We do this on our own, so we don't have a separate foundation or anything.
Let me encourage, because you have a lot of great veterans, let me encourage them to maybe, as a matter of, a lot of the large law firms help you to set up these kind of things, and I bet one would be willing to set up a 501c charitable trust so you can be real legitimate and go out using that arm to get money. Because if you do continue to try in this state, some people see it as a conflict. And so I think if you had the 501c arm, that would be helpful. And the veterans who want work to do, I bet you they could, you could develop that, a board and all that kind of stuff, and get that, because I see where veterans are good at volunteering for things. And
the chairman of our advisor committee, Cheryl Austin, has talked of trying to get something like that set up. Yeah, you know, a lot of people think we're out there whining and begging, and we are, and it does upset them every now and then until we explain that the state provides no assistance. And
this is the time to get money.
Yeah.
Because everybody wants to give veterans and everybody else some money right now.
Well, I was going to ask people for all their pop cans, but I thought maybe that might...
my grandkids get them.
Yeah, they got yours. But, and we are, you know, maybe not as quickly as we should, looking into something like that, because we have to have something. On June 30th this last year, our balance in the trust fund was $390,000. That's since we started asking for money in 1994, and that's what it's developed to. And sometimes the money that's donated is not just here. It comes by roses, by a bench, by this. Oftentimes things we don't need. But what we try to get people is either to direct it towards covered care or just make a general donation so we can use it where we have to. Because the other thing is just not helping the veterans with their cost of care. It's the other thing we have to do is maintain the building out of this trust fund. And that's not necessarily cheap. If you turn to page 18, that'll show you basically how our field offices kind of went away. But that doesn't bother us because we do things just as good, if not better, than we did before. Page 19 will show you our position chart. But, well, since 85, dropping down to what we're asking for the 2003-05 biennium, you'll notice the light blue is our veteran services program. Back in 85, we had about 34 positions. That's down to 19 in the 99-01, and we're trying to maintain that level. That red blip in 97-99 was the authorization for, I think it was 109 employees that I could have hired. We gave those positions back when we decided, you know, we were for sure going to be contracting out the operation of the home. On page 20, how we minimize costs. Some of this I've alluded to. in our home loan program, our veteran services. The Veterans Home is kind of interesting because we have a partnering agreement with the Federal VA Medical Center, where we get all of the medication for our veterans at no cost to the veteran. We have a pharmacy consulting agreement with the Federal VA, where they manage how our pharmaceuticals are given, and they monitor that for us at no cost to us. They provide us with durable medical equipment at no cost to the veterans, such as wheelchairs and games and stuff like that. And then we have a healthcare consulting agreement with the Federal VA Medical Center. Administrative cost comparisons, I'll put us up against anybody. But you'll see with the home loan program, it continues to be right around 5%, overall it's under 5%. I think we're doing very good. One you'll see in the veterans' home, it was relatively high in 97 to 99. That was the ramp-up time when we opened the veterans' home, and then that has continued to go down each year. Information technology, I started with the agency when you had to beg to get a calculator. Today, I think we use technology wisely and as efficiently as anybody, and it does help us with access to client records and allows us to make changes and updates to either individual records or to entire files rapidly, and enables us to get information out to constituent groups and the veterans organizations. We do a lot of things. I guess it's written. Well, I guess that's kind of coming right down to the end of it. So our systems are delivered. We not only use the Department of Administration, Administrative Services information network, but we also have a local area network within the department. We have an office in the federal building in Portland in the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. We're plugged into their local area network. And Mid-Columbia Medical Center has a local area network in the Dalles that the Veterans Home is plugged into, and we utilize that system. The types of systems that agency employees have access to is our loan eligibility, our loan origination, loan servicing systems, microfilm retrieval, remittance processing. They have a full suite of office automation software that they have access to, as well as locally developed forms online. Is there any budget-related policy legislation? No, there is none. Our affirmative action report is attached in the appendix of this report. I don't think, it's not where I would like to see it, but we've downsized. We don't hire unless we absolutely have to hire a position. We try to combine. Our percentages continue to decline as some of the minority employees that we have had in the past elect to retire or to leave the agency. Although our percentages for people with disabilities has increased, but we do participate in the Blacks in Government program to get information out on the department. We try to recruit with the Hispanic community, and we work with the Asian community and tribal governments, trying to make people aware of us and what we do for Oregon veterans. And with that, sir, that is, I guess, considered the high-level overview. And I know Ms. Gilbert with the Department of Administrative Services is anxious. So thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. I'm Linda Gilbert with the Department of Administrative Services, Budget and Management. I will be speaking from a document that looks pretty much like this. 10 pages. I'll go as quickly or as slowly as you like. On the first page, there is a tabular display of the budget history for the department, actually not a long history, but from 1999-01 through the governor's balanced budget. Of note on this display is that there is a 5.3% reduction in general fund from the 01-03 close of session budget. There's a small change in other fund compared to the end of the fifth special session. And finally, other funds non-limited, which provides for home loans, et cetera, is down 15%. On the next page, we have the same budget displayed again by fund type, just for 0305 this time. I would point out that general fund at $2.5 million is 0.3% of this budget. Other funds non-limited is obviously the major portion of it. What I've done on the following page is show the budget. Oops. Excuse me, that's not what I've done on the following page. Leaping ahead of myself. I do have a slide later that takes the non-limited other fund out of the pie and shows what the pieces look like in proportion to each other that are left over. The next page, page four, is a pretty high-level overview of what happened with the dollars. The governor's budget is a 14.5% decrease from 0103, and the legislatively approved budget through fifth special session. That if we exclude the effect of non-limited other funds, the reduction is 0.3%. Major changes are a general that occurred in the special sessions in 2002 are a general fund reduction of $139,000, or about 5.3%. Reductions were made in veteran services, office hours, payments to service organizations, and possibly will be made by closing rural offices. However, that is not a decision of the state. That's a decision of the counties. Major programs and services included in the governor's budget. It maintains the veterans loan and veterans home programs at adequate levels. In veterans services, payments are reduced to non-governmental organizations and to counties. And this is a continuation of the fifth special session, House Bill 5100. On page five, we show the budget in terms of program units, budget program units. And as you will see in budget talk, we have something called non-limited. And again, it's the major portion of this budget at 95%. There is debt service in there of about $583 million, which is payments to bondholders. There is also loan and bond-related expense in there, $222.5 million, and that is loans made to veterans who buy homes. And finally, there's a veteran. The donations to the veterans' home are included in the non-limited section at $135,000 for this biennium. To the upper left, we talk about the loan program at $22.3 million. That's all other fund, and that has 126 positions. It's the nuts and bolts of providing and tracking the loan program. Veteran services, we've talked about a good deal. Of that $3.1 million listed there, $2.7 million is general fund, and they're maintaining the 19 positions. And finally, Veterans Home at $16.4 million. Again, it's all other fund. There are actually three positions associated with this. The rest is contracted out. On page six is the display I alluded to earlier, and this is what the rest of the agency looks like, the rest of the program units look like without non-limited there. And under that scenario, you can get perhaps a better picture of how they relate to each other in terms of size. The next page, seven, is budget by expenditure category. Personal services is at about 2% of the total budget. Services and supplies at 4%. And in personal services, $1.6 million is general fund. The rest is other fund. In services and supplies, the general fund amount is $171,000. Capital outlay is all other funds. Special payments and debt service combined to the other funds non-limited, as we saw before. Again, the largest part of the budget. The next slide begins the process of how we built the governor's budget. It begins with the 2001 close of session budget. Which was $990.6 million total fund, $2.6 million general fund. And we move from there to the legislatively approved actions through April 2002, which forms the agency's base budget. And that included from the second special session some vacancy savings of $45,000 and another $51,616 in general fund for an unspecified 2% reduction, which was taken in aid to veterans organizations. It was not taken from counties at that point. And then there are base budget adjustments, the roll-up of the 0103 position actions, and compensation changes was $2 million other funds, $267,000 general fund. And although this included the reduction of 16 positions, it went up mostly because of the PERS increase and the health care increase. PERS was at a little over 20% of salary, health care over was at 19% of salary. Base debt service adjustment was made, and a base non-limited adjustment was made to adjust to the portfolio size, loan portfolio size, and the activity size. Continuing on page 9, we have the essential packages that deal with inflation and so forth. In the personal services adjustments, there are reductions mostly having to do with expected vacancy savings. In the phase-in, phase-out package, 020, the House Bill 3534 that Director Magus referred to earlier is phased out at $100,000 general fund. And in addition, the 16 positions that Director Magus has been discussing were phased out in this package for $2.1 million other funds. Inflation and price list adjustments in general was under an average of 3.5%. There was no extraordinary inflation on any item. State government service charges, you may not hear this too many times in the following days, but they were reduced for this agency, having to do specifically with Treasury charges. The fewer transactions with Treasury, the fewer dollars you pay, as that's a pay by the transaction. Revenue shortfalls, the agency identified $94,000 other fund reduction in the Veterans Home Program revenue and reduced one position. On the next page, we have the policy packages that were added to this budget. Package 081 covered actions in the 2002 third special session, and what that specifically here, there was an elimination of the February 2003 cost of living adjustment that state employees will receive. This was done for salary range 38 and above and was a reduction in other funds. Package 091 was biennializing the 2002 fifth special session in terms of reduced payments to organizations and reduced payments to counties. You can see the amounts there, and that's a general fund reduction. Finally, the agency had submitted a package for HIPAA compliances, Health Insurance Portability and Accounting Act compliance. We're not, as a state, close enough to the point of knowing exactly what this is going to cost every agency, and so what we've put in here is a $1 general fund placeholder until we know more about how we as a state are going to go forward with compliance with this. And the governor's budget also assumes that there will be a general appropriation in the emergency fund to cover eventual compliance with it for the agencies that haven't so far. This is the end of my presentation. Are there any questions?
Ms. Gilda, can you tell me if the governor has anticipated an increase, possible increase in services to adult and family services, because we're losing programs like in Multnomah County and other places, other counties across the state, and especially when we look at rural counties and urban counties like Multnomah County. And I know many veterans feel as I think I would feel too, as if they've been demoted in society, not having services through the veterans, but having to come to adult and family services. But nevertheless, it must be done. Have we anticipated that in the budget?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I have not worked on such a specific transfer analysis. It may be that the Department of Human Services analysts have worked on that sort of thing, but I couldn't say for sure. I don't know if they have.
Mr. Chairman, it would appear to me that somewhere along the line, if we want to maintain the dignity of people, and especially people who have served our country, this would be one of the concerns that we would raised, because they're going to have services from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are not going to be able to receive it in from the department, then we have to anticipate it on another end. So maybe I can talk with you a little further in terms of how we send some kind of budget note for, to have this recognized.
Mm-hmm.
Back to you.
At this point, Director Mangus' turn again.
This is basically a lot of the information that we've already talked about, but it's just relating to specific programs, and beginning with the largest program we have is the Veterans Home Loan Program. And again, it was to provide a provide affordable housing to returning servicemen in Lemon. And it not only, you know, stop and think that it's just a government program, but it's not, because it has provided a valuable economic impact on Oregon's economy over the years. The statutory basis, or the basis of the Oregon Home Loan Program, is Article 11A of the Oregon Constitution, and most of the statutes are in 406 to 408. The delivery of services, well, we've made loans since 1945, over $330,000, $7 billion into the Oregon economy. The criteria for qualified Oregon veterans loans contained in the federal tax code requires entry into military service prior to 1977. You have 30 years from date of separation to use your home loan. What that really does is limit the home loan to Vietnam-era veterans, and we're winding down on that 2003. So about three more years of eligibility on that. But ballot measure 83, that was part of SJR 2, I believe it was, did change the Oregon Constitution so we can address younger veterans from Oregon who entered the service after 1976 and have received a campaign medal or expeditionary medal for participation in some type of campaign, which could be the Balkans, Afghanistan, or whatever. And we have been making loans to these individuals, and we'll continue doing it that way until we can get the federal tax code changed. We service around 16,000 accounts. We are looking to fund for funding about 900 loans this biennium, and that would either be in-house or through our network. Our local lenders originate about 60% of our loans. We also work with private appraisers. We used to have all of our own appraisers, so you know, we use private appraisers now. We work with title companies, insurance companies, credit reporting agencies. Beginning on page 25, some of the things, the performance measures we talked about earlier, are more graphically displayed, and then the information since 97, the data is listed down below. And I won't spend a lot of time on that, except that you know, when you look at us compared to these people that we rate ourselves against, such as delinquency rates, you'll see that we do a pretty good job of managing our delinquencies in the home loan program. The performance measure two is the actual non-performing asset ratio, again against the information provided by the Mortgage Bankers Association. Our veteran home loan number three, percentage of pre-Ullman bond refunding utilized. Pre-Ullman, it's a term used in the industry that's generally not familiar. Many of you remember Al Ullman from Oregon, congressman, was chairman of the Ways and Means Committee back in the late 70s, early 80s, and it was during his period of time that the Mortgage Bond Subsidy Tax Act was passed, and that was effective in January 1981, and that's kind of changed the whole structure of how bonds were issued and how you could use the proceeds and the criteria involved. Bonds that were issued prior to the Mortgage Bond Subsidy Tax Act can be addressed differently than bonds issued after 1981. And when these pre-Ullman bonds become eligible where we can refund those bonds, we can refund those bonds, take cash, and we can use that money, because it's non-restricted, to make loans to the post-1976 Oregon veterans, because we can't issue bonds and use those proceeds. So there's no restrictions on the bonds prior to 81. These bonds become available not on any regular schedule, and there's not a lot of them, but so far we've been able to meet our need. But when we have excess capacity beyond our need, we then work with the Oregon Housing Division, and we allow them to refund our bonds, and that allows them more dollars to make available for low-cost housing. So in a way, we've partnered with them to help their program, and it also helps our program, and it's worked well. Measure 4 just really talks about our loan origination with outside loan originators, banks and mortgage brokers, factors that affect our program are, today we have a highly trained, motivated staff, but we're all getting old. I think our average seniority at the department exceeds 20 years. I think it's probably the highest in state government for any. And like me, I think I'll be here 33 years in a couple of months. You're thinking of moving out on the other end. Matter of fact, as a younger Vietnam veteran eligible for Social Security this year, and that really makes you feel bad. So we are losing. So we're in a constant state of having to train, and as we look at how we bring people in to do these jobs in the future, and hopefully find people that are as dedicated to working with veterans as we have had over the years. We use an integrated loan origination and servicing package. I think that allows us to provide efficient service both on the origination and the servicing side of our program, on the mortgage side of our program. Fluctuation in interest rates affects the demand for service, and the federal tax code severely limits how we can do business and what veterans we can serve and how we can serve those veterans. I mentioned our interagency partnership with Housing and Community Services. I think that works well. Works well for them. It works well for us, and it's a good deal. Our revenue sources are basically the payments we receive back on loan and contract sales to loans to veterans, our investment earnings, which, like everybody, a few years ago, we were doing quite well to do today. The Treasury doesn't earn any more for us than you're getting your money at your local bank. So we still earn on our investments, but not like we used to. No general fund monies are used with the Veterans Home Loan Program. The funds used are the non-limited, the issuance of bonds to obtain funds to make loans to Oregon veterans. And we don't anticipate any increase in fees or anything during this next biennium. The next page is just a chart that shows back to 1985 basically how the loan side of the budget has gone. This is including inflation and everything over the years, last 18 years, and you'll see that that budget has continued to decrease, primarily because we are returning staff to you each legislative or budget hearing process. On page 31 gives you an idea of the positions that have been related to the home loan program and how that continues to decline. And again, I would say with our loan program, we're doing everything we ever did in the past, and we're doing it just as good, if not better. And so it's not a problem with returning these positions. Program reductions. We try to follow, the biggest cost in, I think, state government is your personal services. And so that's what we've always looked at. If you don't need it, don't keep it, because you can't afford it. And we've tried to work smart and but also trying to track that with the decline in our outstanding portfolio. Fewer people are required to manage the program, and then we've developed a number of partnerships that have helped us to do business without the numbers that we've enjoyed in the past. It talks about program cost factors and program growth, and growth is really determined by the number of veterans that we have that have eligibility for the program. But a change in federal legislation could have a direct impact on the number of veterans that are entitled to our home loan program. Definitely anxiety about going to war with Iraq would have play a role in maybe the possibility that we change our the federal tax code. Page 33, the home loan program essential packages, actually Linda has talked you through primarily all of this. Our outstanding debt has been reduced. Mentioned that's $1.2 billion. About 52% of the state's general obligation debt is with the Oregon Veterans Home Loan Program. Our home loan budget reductions, other than the ones that Linda went through, there are no other reductions in the home loan program. Are there any enhancement packages to the loan program? No, there isn't. Page 35 talks about facilities in the home loan program. I invited you to visit the Veterans Home, but down the street, we own the building at 700 Summer Street that belongs to the Oregon War Veterans Fund. We think it's a great building, 86,000 square feet. Unlike some public buildings, we don't defer our maintenance. We take care of what belongs to us. And so I would invite you to come and take a look at our building down there. As we've downsized, we've freed up space. We rent the top floor of the building to the Health Licensing Board and Oregon contractors, landscapers, and that. And we're looking for more square footage to make available. The walls of the building and the HVAC system are rated as good. The roof is rated as good right now. We don't see any large expenses heading our way. But for the next biennium, we expect about $348,000 to be spent on maintaining the building. But that includes your day-to-day janitorial and fix this and paint that type stuff. There's no capital improvement projects. We've done a lot. You know, we suffered a great deal in the flood way back when, but the flood happened on Thursday, and we had it cleaned up and open for business Monday morning. But our basement had over 1 million gallons of water in it, and that was pumped out by Sunday. And we had them down there, employees down there, cleaning that up with a bobcat, brooms, and hoses. And the only thing that got hurt was our elevator for a while, but we had that back up and ready to go. We're audited the home loan program, since we do have a big piece of the action as far as the state's debt. It's audited by the Secretary of State. We learned a long time ago not to, you know, complain about them, ride with them, use it as a teaching tool. And once we got through the mid-80s, I don't think there's ever been a comment about the program on the other than good things to say on how we run our business and how we manage our finances. Our veteran services program, it's you know, it's something to help people who served in uniform. We're very proud of that. It relates back to 11A of the Oregon Constitution, and so the statutes are in 406 to 408. And we deliver our services not only with our office, but with our relationship to the county veteran service officers. Our conservatorship program, although we don't advertise it, we have 266 protected persons that we provide financial management services for. It's not a guardianship program. It's strictly a financial, but you find yourself actually kind of managing the person, too. And these are people that banks, generally the courts and the federal VA, when they look for somebody, the reason they come to us is they're difficult. These are people that, for the most part, are rated for a psychiatric disability, or if it's psychiatric and drug or alcohol abuse that's related to that. And so even if they have a sizable estate, banks tend not to want people that will come into their place of business and disrupt the normal course of business, such as throwing steer manure all over the lobby. But we welcome that. I think we've developed a good program, a good reputation for expert management of the these estates. And there's only Oregon, Arizona, New Mexico, Minnesota that actually have formal conservatorship programs. There are some other what they call rep payee programs, but these are all court appointments. So we're, in a way, we may be the conservator of last resort, but we do it. They're veterans or survivors of veterans. We do it. We do it well. Oregon veteran population is roughly 368,000. I don't know of anybody that's come through and counted these people, but we trend off the census, and then we're about 1% of the national. So Oregon's veteran population is actually growing because we have an in-migration on the vet side. And of that population, a substantial portion of that is an aging veteran. And aging veterans generally, like all aging people, require more services generally of government. And we're part of the solution to that. We work with the next measure on page 38. If you think about disability compensation, compensation is paid for service-connected disabilities. And if you look for, as we measure ourselves against the national average, the in 2001 data, the national compensation rate for veterans was about $7,647. In Oregon, we've got that up to $8,693. So we're performing above the national average and what other states do for their veterans as far as working disability claims, which means more dollars coming back in and direct benefit payments. Measure 6, that's on appeals. We were very high on appeals. You notice kind of a decline. We lost some staff, retraining, but now it's on the upswing, and you can see what our targets are projected to be out in 2002, 3, 4, and 5. We have a very good staff, very qualified staff, and we love to take the federal government on. Our Veterans News is kind of our pride and joy. It's our newspaper for Oregon veterans, and it's used to transfer information. And our circulation from 97, we've gone from just under 50,000 till our circulation today around 68,000, and continued to grow. It's a good paper. If you like it, I'll make sure you get that. We have a website, and actually I think it's better than most state agencies, so invite you to log on, take a look at us. We think it's pretty effective because it does get people to look at it, and as time goes by, we're getting more and more hits on that and more direct inquiries as a result of their ability to access the agency. Factors affecting the service, the aging veteran population, that's going to increase demand for our claims and counseling services, not only on us, but just on county veteran service officers. Also, the time, lengthy time decisions. The federal VA is really having a time of it. Their backlogs they're basically years behind in working their claims. And on top of that, when they make a decision that, you know, it's not agreed with, that's extended because then we have to go into the appeal. And they're trying to address this on a federal level. They're having their problems, and we're trying to work right with it. Veterans organizations are trying to work with it to try to speed up the claims for veterans. But it's frustrating for the average individual when they have to wait around a year or longer to get their claim adjudicated. The VA healthcare system, that's a real trip right now, and I don't know whether you've ever had any constituent complaints, but, you know, for years the VA went out and we requested people to enroll in the VA healthcare system. Well, now people did come. They asked and they did come. And now they don't have the resources to treat all of these veterans in a timely fashion. And now they're trying to, they have eight categories, and now they're blocking new enrollments into Category 8, which is generally a person without any service-connected, non-service-connected disability benefits being received at a higher income level. It should not impact the service-disabled veteran in receiving care. The care they give is excellent, at least in our Portland hospital. I would put that up against anybody. I know if I want to go to a hospital, I want to go to the VA in Portland. They're good. But their backlog, their resources, even though they have the highest budget they've ever had, they can't meet the demand for service, and it's an aging. A lot of people are trying to get into the system to get prescription drugs. The cost of prescription drugs nationwide is driving people to the VA. And basically our general fund budget for veteran service has been relatively flat. Enough said on that. Our interagency, intergovernmental programs, we work with county veteran service officers, 34 county veteran service officers in the state. We work with tribal governments, and we have a good, that's a hard program to access, but for years we've worked with NEVA and some of the individual tribes, and we have a niche there, and they do participate in some of our training now, and I think we're a little luckier in some state agencies. And we work with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. That's probably our primary partner on the federal side, on both the benefits side and health care, and even on the cemetery system. Oregon has Willamette National Cemetery in Portland, considered Arlington of the West, National Cemetery in Roseburg, and a National Cemetery at a large one at Eagle Point outside of the Medford, White City area. Revenue sources for our veteran services, this general fund, our conservatorship program is general fund and fee income, where we're allowed to charge 5% of the income to the estate, but on people, individuals who have need everything they have to live on, we do not assess the fee on them, so we can provide all of that money for living, shelter, and food, and that. Page 44 is pretty much, you'll see, pretty much flat budget display there since 1985 for our veteran services. Page 45 is our basically our position description in veteran services. This is just for the department, doesn't include county veteran service officers. But we've gone from 34 positions down to 19. Program growth reductions. We've been relatively flat since 85.
Senator Morris.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. The 305 budget of $3.1 million, is that by and large personnel expense?
Pretty much everything is related to personnel. We have some S&S, and it's not a lot. And special payments to county veteran service officers, and some distribution of funds to veterans organizations that maintain a claims office in the federal VA, which is the American Legion, the VFW, and the American Legion, VFW, and Disabled American Veterans. They do the same thing our office does. If they weren't there, you know, our staff couldn't manage the claims that are in. But that's the big portion of it. County service officers, veterans organizations, our staff of 19, and I think 100 and some thousand dollars for S&S. That's it.
Okay, what was behind my question is I'm wanting to make sure I have accurate information if I'm starting to divide numbers. If I divide 19 into 3.1 million to get a cost per position, is that an accurate number?
No, because that would be the entire budget, and a portion of those funds for the county, it would just have to be the amount related to the Veteran Services Division which is roughly, if you added $1.5 million and six, well, the total $2,184,000, and divided the 19 positions into that, that would give you roughly the cost for our Veteran Services division.
Thank you.
And the rest of it would be county and vet organization funds. Oh, and that would include our conservatorship program people too. So. Let's see. Program cost factors. Even though we've remained flat, the demand for service related to Agent Orange claims, the undetermined illnesses from the Gulf War, the aging veteran, now SHAD, which is a shipboard hazard. Program growth.
Question on that one, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the newspaper yesterday, John, where they are saying that more than the federal government is now believing that more people are affected by Agent Orange and some other exposures that they had, and so therefore it's that more people are going to have access. What does this do in increasing your numbers?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, what we have to do, some people are pretty astute, and they can access that system on their own, but what we have to try to do is get that information out to people. We did have a TV advertisement this summer trying to make people aware of the prostate cancer relationship to Agent Orange. Federal VA was not very happy with me doing that because that just increased, you know, the number of people coming to them. But the fact is people have to know that. The veterans organizations, our county veteran service officers and our staff are there to talk to people and explain these benefits and how to access the system, and we will help them. We've never asked anybody, we don't flip forms at people and say, fill this out and, you know, send it in to this address. We sit there and we do it for them, we help them. So when a newspaper article comes out, yes, you know, people try to search somewhere to get information. Calling the federal government is not a good solution. Calling us is a good solution.
So, John, for those people who have computers in their homes, how are we getting information out to them?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, there are any number of sites out there that have good information on various disabilities big issues like Agent Orange and SHAD and that. And even the federal VA has a lot of information out. But the veterans organizations, there's a lot of watchdog groups that put out good information that's current, real quick. And then our website, too, and our newsletter. For Oregon, you know, Oregon's pretty rural compared to some of these hotshot states back east. And it's, you know, they tend to look at us as Rhode Island or something. It's not that way in Oregon. We're big, we're rural, and when you get outside of this little Willamette Valley corridor, you know, they deserve the same type of assistance as anybody that lives downtown Portland.
Right.
And we try to make that available to them. And that's why the county program is so important. Anywhere from Lake County to Burns to Ontario to wherever, a veteran should have that same access. I think everybody's getting antsy with me. I tend to talk. Veteran Service Essential Packages, Gilbert went through that, talked about the administration of House Bill 3534 from last session that was taken care of. The Veteran Service Program budget reductions, Ms. Gilbert went through that, Veteran Services Program enhancement package, so there's just the $1 there on HIPAA. Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the problems we have as a budget committee, we hear from the state agencies, and in this case there's a reduction to counties, but yet it may be difficult for you to, there will be 37 different county solutions to that reduction, but could you, do you have any idea in terms of what level of reduced services or reduced program will occur on the range of with the range of county programs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, I can't give you an accurate answer on that because each county is going to approach that a little bit differently. Multnomah County, who, like you said, you were one of the ones that was instrumental in getting that program reestablished, has a memo out today that they had three counselors there and I think a support person. That office is either going to close or it's going to be reduced to one half-time position. Other counties have reduced the number of hours that are available. And some office counties have over the years, when they've had budget problems, closed an office. Recent times, county budget officials, commissioners, and that have taken a little more positive view towards the veteran office, even though it's not mandated, because what it does for the population and the fact that it does bring in dollars and it avoids individuals going into other systems that cost either county or state government more dollars. I couldn't tell you what every county would do. We really appreciated it when Multnomah came back in because they're the largest of that population in the state. And you deal with a different type of vet because you have a lot of vets that are, you know, if you want to talk about homeless people, you're going to primarily find those in the large metropolitan area. And there's things you can do for these individuals. And that's what your county guys were doing up there too. But there's no cut and dry answer on that.
But just for the committee's benefit, when that program started in Multnomah County, they worked with a homeless vet whose disability claim had been turned down many years before. They were able to reestablish that claim, get back benefits for them. There was enough money to be able to put down and purchase a house for him. So you're talking about, in some of these cases, just incredible impact on individuals' lives and their ability to function. So he went virtually from homeless to homeowner through the Veteran Service Program. And that's pretty spectacular result.
Just in our office, our staff has appealed claims and fought the feds and won hundreds of thousands of dollars in retroactive benefits where claims have been denied in the past, and it's because the VA made a mistake. You know, they top-sheeted it, and they didn't dig into the records, and it's a good example of what can be done. But the average person, he might have filed a claim and got a letter saying denied, and never didn't know how to fight it. It's a system that's not user friendly, and that's why your county service officer is an advocate, just like other people.
As we're going through the budget deliberations, as you get a better sense of how these impacts are going to be affecting counties, if you could let us know, that would be helpful.
We can do that via. Actually, this is the first time since Bob Straub that we've had a veteran for a governor, and he has spent time up at the Oregon Veterans Home, spent an afternoon up there, I think he would be able, if you weren't in the service, you don't believe some of the things people say, you don't believe, but if you were in the service, you know they're telling the truth because it happens. There's an expression for that I won't use, but it's true, and I think this governor is more in tune with vets and some of the things that they faced, and would be supportive. I'm here to support his budget, but and you and his office are trying to deal with a big problem, the general fund. And I don't know what's happening on Measure 28. My guess is it'll pass, but that doesn't solve the problem. And as far as dollars available, I think this governor, if something could be done, would be very supportive of the system that exists for helping veterans, because I think he sees the positive side, not only on just the lifestyle, but on the economics of the program. So I'll try to get you as much information on that as I can. Really, I guess, well, the Veterans Home. I've talked about it. That's a great program. It's literally driving us nuts because we have to go out and beg for money. Literally. If you look on page 51 of Major Number 7 on the Vet Zone, more graphically, you can see what the cost is, the resident cost. If their income in 2003 is $75, and we get that on an average by taking their pension, the aid and attendance, the Social Security, and dividing it, and this is on a 30-day month, ends up they have $75 a day available for their cost of care. Well, it's costing them $74.50. Next year will be the proof in the pudding. We can't afford with our trust fund to provide covered care for all the veterans that where we may exceed their available income. Measure number 8 shows you our trust fund balance, but for 2002, that was on June 30th, it's $389,000, but on December 31, that's $462,000, but also $85,000 has been tagged and set aside for covered care for the individuals that require that right now. And the factors affecting the home, we are dealing with an aging population, but a lot of these people, by entering the veterans' home, have avoided entering the Medicaid system of the state of Oregon. So we've been saving the state about 40 cents on the dollar since the home opened, and that was that targeting low-income veterans and providing care. We've talked about what they receive. One of the things that we helped do was start a nursing program at the Columbia Community College. Worked with the community college and other the city of the Dalles, Wasco County, and the employment office, and that program is going. But I believe the, can't remember his name, Dr. Oda, I believe, the president of the community college. I know he's met with the governor to talk about the nursing programs, as has Eastern Oregon State University. There's a shortage in rural America, and the Dalles, Wasco County is no different, and trying to get the funds to make sure those programs, so they can get trained people out that we benefit from too, because some of them will come to the home, and if they are available, then we can get that last wing hopefully open. Revenue sources for the home is strictly other funds. It's either coming from the vet or it's coming from the federal VA in the form of per diem, and there are no other funds other than donations. You look at our page 54, it shows the budget comparisons for the home since it opened, and this is money that's coming in from the resident, the federal VA, and then it's being turned right around, and then we're paying it to the contract operator of the home. Position comparison on page 55, you authorized me to hire 109 people. I elected not to do it, so we gave all those positions back. We kept 4. We're given 1 position back. We'll go forward with 3 positions in the next biennium.
Excuse me. Again, dividing numbers is dangerous.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Go 305, 16.2 million. If that's divided by what number to get the cost per bed? That was your 155 bed facility, and you're currently running at something a little over 100.
We have 104 today, but that cost per bed. okay, the budget was prepared in 0305 based on 140 filled beds. But if we don't have the staff, we're not going to get there. So I guess if you're going to divide, you would use 140.
Okay.
But we're not there.
That was the number that I'm interested in.
Yeah, in the budget preparation, yeah.
Senator Carter, we are running out of time.
I'm good.
Are you okay? Can we ask
that?
Great. Okay. Because we have to get to the floor, and we have some things that need to be instructions to the committee.
Okay, well, look at page 58. Okay. There's a picture of the home. And, again, you're all invited, and I'll make sure that I'm there to take you on a tour. With that, I conclude my presentation. Thank you very much. I'll be willing to answer any questions today, tomorrow, or before I retire.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, by the way.
As you know, this is a public hearing only, we can't go to work sessions mm-hmm. yet, but there are a couple of things that aren't included in this budget presentation. The governor's wage freeze, mm-hmm. There's also factors for inflation where there's been a policy decision by the co-chairs. Certain agency budgets have the inflation factor taken out, but it's reduced for the inflation that was built in. We've had instructions from the co-chairs to do that for all budgets, so that has not been taken into consideration in this budget that has come forward. So I'm looking for direction from the committee
yeah.
to approve it, for us to work with the agency to finalize mm-hmm. the impact then of the expected freeze of positions, the wage and salary freezes for 0305, as well as the impact of the reduction on the budget for services and supplies and capital outlays using a lesser inflation rate. With your concurrence, we will work with the agency to do that so that when we come back, when we can have a work session, we will be able to have at least work with the agency and come up with mm-hmm. recommendations we've heard today, as well as these additional adjustments.
Well, Co-Chair, you ask us to do that. Yes. Sorry,
I just want to ask, what is your pleasure? Mr. Chairman, did you?
They've asked us to have that information.
So it pretty makes sense to me. So when we come back, and especially, Mr. Chairman, when you look at how well fixed the audit has positioned them, mm-hmm. they've looked at it, and you look at how they've followed the benchmarks, with the exceptions of maybe some exposure, which I can ask, talk to John about that, some litigious exposure in terms of the service to the nursing home, those kind of issues that it appears maybe need to know. So with your pleasure,
without
John,
objection.
I'm going to leave it there.
We'll let you know.
We will work with the agency so that we can get back together next time.
Okay. Any further business? Without none, we'll rush to the floor. And we thank you so much, particularly all the veterans being here today and all of the presentation. Very informative. And with that, we'll be adjourned.